Hey, I am Jeremiah, this is Christian Anarchy, and you are, I can't remember your name. We'll say you're excited to get through the intro music and to the meat of the show.
We begin with concluding remarks, break up the pieces and examine the parts. Your words always cut when they're cliche, but here's my knife because I came for the buffet. This is the way it goes when you are part of it, nervously say words, then also surprising.
Okay, here's the deal. I'm leaving on a little vacation today for Labor Day weekend, and when I looked at my notes to record the podcast and put it up before I left, I realized that I don't have time to do the whole thing. I realized that it would be a very lengthy podcast, and so I'm just going to do half of it today. I wanted to let you know that ahead of time in case when you get to the end of the episode, you think, man, this feels like half of an episode, and he never answered any of the fundamental questions I have about this. I want you to know that the reason you might feel that way is because this is only a half of an episode. I'm not going to get to answering the fundamental questions that may arise when talking about protecting the environment in a free society. So with that in mind, let's move forward. So one request I received from someone is to talk about environmental protections in a free society. And while I will eventually get to talking about this, I would like to first dispense with the illusion that government regulations are the ideal way to protect the environment. I suspect a lot of the questions and concerns about how the environment will be protected in a free society are directly related to the belief that a good way to care for the environment is by having a government. Sometimes when I talk about a world without government, people are dissatisfied when I propose potential solutions to the problems they raise because the solutions are imperfect. It can feel like they expect me to describe a world where perfect justice is done on all occasions, or else they will reject anarchy entirely. It's helpful to keep in mind this is a double standard. If government were held to the same standard some people hold anarchy to, they would reject government as well because government doesn't result in perfect justice being done on all occasions either. But they usually aren't comparing the two. When we evaluate the practicality of anarchy and how a world without government might function, we should not compare these hypothetical suggestions to a perfect world which doesn't exist. We need to compare it to the government in place now, where theft and murder happen and sometimes go unpunished, where property disputes are sometimes mishandled and justice isn't done, and where mass pollution occurs despite tens of thousands of pages of regulations in place to prevent it. This is why I often point out the flaws of government in a particular area. Before I describe how things might work in a free society, I want to make sure we are comparing anarchy to the system in place now, not comparing it to the perfect world of one's imagination where government sets everything right. So I'm going to start off talking about a few of the ways having a government is harmful to the environment. I will be reading from a few different articles. Most of the information in the articles is widespread and not highly debated. If I neglect to tell you the source of any of this stuff, you can go to the christianarchy.net website and check the page for this episode, where I will link to the sources. At present, guess what organization is the world's single greatest polluter? Congratulations, you got it. Or at least you're probably pretty close. The biggest polluter in the world is the United States Department of Defense. No one is quite as adept at taking perfectly healthy land, air, and water and leaving it so completely ruined it's unusable and unsuitable for humanity. When the DoD pollutes, they really get after it. Sure, they use over 300,000 barrels of oil a day and burn that stuff up, creating many metric tons of CO2, but I'm not quite convinced it's fair to call a pollutant the gas people exhale and the stuff plants need in the air so they can breathe and create oxygen. However, I assure you, this is only a tiny fraction of the real pollution the DoD engages in. Let me read you this brief list from one of the articles linked to on the website from a work by Sarah Flounders. Some examples of U.S. military polluting are U.S.-made landmines and cluster bombs spread over wide areas of Africa, Asia, Latin America, and the Middle East continue to spread death and destruction even after the wars have ceased. 35 years after the Vietnam War, dioxin contamination is 300 to 400 times higher than safe levels, resulting in severe birth defects and cancers into the third generation of those affected. U.S. military policies and wars in Iraq have created severe desertification of 90% of the land, changing Iraq from a food exporter into a country that imports 80% of its food. In the U.S., military bases top the Superfund list of the most polluted places as perchlorate and trichlorothiazide seep into the drinking water, aquifers, and soil. Nuclear weapons testing in the American Southwest and the South Pacific Islands has contaminated millions of acres of land and water with radiation, while uranium tailings defile Navajo reservations. Rusting barrels of chemicals and solvents and millions of rounds of ammunition are criminally abandoned by the Pentagon in bases around the world. And that's the last of the list from that article. So the DOD has been destroying land like crazy over the last half century. They've made it unusable through physical destruction, landmines, poison, and radiation. They have gone to war in other countries and left them with an environment much more difficult to live in. Everywhere they put another base is in danger of severe pollution. The military is too concerned with protecting people's freedom by invading countries barely able to afford a standing army to worry about the environmental damage they cause. And you know what they've been using a lot of in Iraq? Depleted uranium shells. Uranium is the same stuff used in nuclear reactors and nuclear weapons. While depleted uranium is deliberately created to be less radioactive and is not harmful in small doses, when you start shooting it all over a region of the world, it creates similar problems to what one would expect with a nuclear reactor leak or a nuclear weapon explosion. The city of Fallujah is a location which was subjected to a particularly high amount of depleted uranium and white phosphorus. The following are a few excerpts from an article on the Huffington Post. Noting the birth defects in the Iraqi city of Fallujah, Jamal says, "They're extremely hard to bear witness to, but it's something that we all need to pay attention to. What this has generated is, from 2004 up to this day, we are seeing a rate of congenital malformations in the city of Fallujah that has surpassed even that in the wake of the Japanese cities of Hiroshima and Nagasaki that nuclear bombs were dropped on at the end of World War II. Thus, last November, a group of British and Iraqi doctors petitioned the UN to investigate an alarming rise in birth defects at Fallujah's hospitals. Young women in Fallujah, they wrote, are terrified of having children because of the increasing number of babies born grotesquely deformed, with no heads, two heads, a single eye in their foreheads, scaly bodies, or missing limbs. In addition, young children in Fallujah are now experiencing hideous cancers and leukemias. The International Journal of Environmental Research and Public Health has just published an epidemiological study, Cancer, Infant Mortality, and the Birth-Sex Ratio in Fallujah, Iraq, 2005 through 2009, which has found, among much else, that Fallujah is experiencing higher rates of cancer, leukemia, and infant mortality than Hiroshima and Nagasaki did in 1945. That's the end of that article. What does the U.S. have to show for its expansive military presence? What is the result of their destructive global polluting? One result is the destabilization of the Middle East. Another is a lot of enemies. If you want to create terrorists, if you want whole regions of the globe to be upset with you, angry enough to start a war with you, whatever sort of war they can muster, the actions of the U.S. military are an excellent blueprint to follow. Interfere with everything. Fill the land with dangerous explosives, making it unusable. Leave your chemicals to poison the soil and the water. Use radioactive shells, which cause cancer in the most vulnerable, and mess with the reproductive system of the healthy so much their genetic transference is severely compromised. This is sure to create enemies who would like you to stop invading their country and destroying their lives and the lives of their children. And who is going to hold the military accountable for their actions? Who is going to shut down their destructive behavior? Who will bring justice to those who have suffered from mass environmental destruction by the Department of Defense? The government? Seems unlikely, does it not? Who else can? That's what happens when you allow one organization to have so much power. A power maintained in the world through violence, and made possible domestically by all the people who seek to justify its existence. For the Department of Defense to be held accountable for their pollution, the government is the only organization which has the power to hold them accountable, and the only hope an average citizen has is a vote. And what can the voter actually do? Next to nothing. They can vote for a couple of congressmen and a president with the hopes these people will seek to hold one of the most essential parts of their organization accountable for misbehavior. They have to hope politicians go against their own organization. And if the DOD is actually held accountable and is forced to pay restitution, who pays? You and I pay for their misbehavior, for their misactions. They say, because we screwed up, you need to give us your money so we can pay those we wronged. And if you don't pay us, we'll kill you. This is the type of justice you can hope for when the government is in the wrong. In light of the reality about the way government works, it shouldn't be any surprise that DOD is the world's biggest polluter. Anyone who can destroy the land, water, and air of others without negative consequence is more likely to do so than one who may realistically be held liable. What about the organization within the government responsible for taking care of the environment? The Environmental Protection Agency. They can't be bad for the environment, can they? I'm not sure if they're a net benefit or a net loss to the well-being of the environment, but one story in particular will help us see the EPA suffers from the same problems that are part of any government agency. An article from The Examiner outlines a recent EPA involvement in an environmental disaster quite well. The article I'm about to read is regarding the spill of toxic waste into the Animas River in Colorado. After weeks of prodding from various news agencies, the EPA finally released documents on Friday that showed it was aware of a blowout risk of poisonous wastewater from the infamous Gold King mine. Even so, the EPA only had a perfunctory plan in place if the 3 million gallons of toxic water were to actually spill. One of the action items was to build a settling pond outside the mine before any work began, but that was never completed. After the spill, three settling ponds were created outside the mine to capture the ongoing spillage. As first reported here, the EPA sent a team to the abandoned mine near Silverton, Colorado, on August 5th to build a drainage pipe for the toxic wastewater building up inside the long-abandoned gold mine. Instead, EPA contracted workers inadvertently unleashed a torrent of toxic water that ended up in the Animas and San Juan Rivers, a mustard-yellow plume that traveled 300 miles and across three states. The AP is also reporting that the documents shed new light on what the EPA knew before the spill and whether it could have done more to prevent the disaster, As early as June 2014, a work order for the planned cleanup showed the mine was no longer accessible due to the entrance being partially collapsed in 1995. The report also said, "This condition has likely caused impounding of water behind the collapse. Conditions may exist that could result in a blowout of the blockages and cause a release of large volumes of contaminated mine waters and sediment from inside the mine." And in May 2015, an action plan was created by the EPA contractor, Environmental Restoration LLC, also noted the potential for a blowout. The May plan called for the construction of a spillover pond to trap any wastewater from escaping into the waterways. The pond was never finished. David Gray, an EPA spokesperson, said that the document outlined steps that should have been followed, but it would be up to pending investigations to decide if the pond should have been in place before the work started. The document dump occurred late Friday night, where it would be less likely to get media attention ahead of the weekend. Worse, the documents were heavily redacted. The actual 71-page safety plan contained only a few lines on what to do if there was an actual spill: locate the source and stop the flow, begin containment and recovery of the spilled materials, and alert downstream drinking water systems as needed. Cynthia Kaufman, Colorado's Attorney General, said that after reviewing Friday night's documents, she remains frustrated with the EPA's lack of answers. Kaufman told the AP that the plan shows there was the possibility of a spill and how it would affect the delicate ecosystem, but no indication if EPA workers even followed their own plan. "I want to give the EPA the benefit of the doubt here. I really want to do that," Kaufman said. "It's getting harder." This comes on the heels of another report released by the right-leaning American Action Forum, which estimates the total cost for cleaning up the man-made mess could run as high as $28 billion. So far, the EPA has spent over $3.7 million. The Daily Caller also reports that not only will the EPA wastewater spill in Colorado cause environmental damages for decades to come, but it could also end up costing taxpayers tens of billions of dollars. That's because the toxic plume from the abandoned mine contained lead, arsenic, thallium, and other heavy metals that can cause health problems and harm aquatic life. After the spill, the EPA waited nearly a day before notifying downstream communities of the spill and who rely on the rivers for drinking water, fishing, and recreation. The agency has come under heavy fire for not being more forthcoming and for refusing to tell officials early on what was in the toxic soup that contaminated much of the surrounding waterways. Regarding that article, I want to make it clear, I am not saying the EPA is the only one to blame in this circumstance. They are not. I actually think it's unfair to blame them as the main cause of the spill. They didn't initially create the conditions which led to the pollution of the Animas River. The mining company many decades ago created those conditions. The EPA was left in charge of keeping the toxic waste contained. It was in this duty of containing the waste that the EPA failed due to negligence. When we talk about environment in a free society, we must compare it to the world now where environmental disasters still happen. Will organizations in a free society who are in charge of keeping toxic wastewater from gushing into a river, resulting in mass contamination, make mistakes which result in property damage? Of course not, they'd never do that. I'm obviously kidding. Yes, of course they will. I do try to be upfront that I'm not attempting to describe a perfect world. I'm just working toward one which treats people with dignity. But there are two main differences which make putting a private organization in charge of such containment preferable to a government organization. The first is that the EPA is paid through taxes. I mention this not because I vehemently oppose taxation, but because taxation removes all meaningful accountability from the government. Let's say the EPA goes to a government-run court, which then finds that the government organization was at fault for their mishandling of the spill and needs to pay damages to those who have suffered as a result of their neglect. Where does the EPA get the money from to pay for the damages their releasing of the toxic water caused? If you've been listening to this podcast since the first episode, I hope I've explained enough that you know by now and you understand why this is a problem for accountability. The EPA is funded through violent force, through taxation. And so when the EPA is found to be financially liable for errors they make to pay for their mistakes, they use the violent force of government to extract more money from taxpayers. Their budget isn't cut, and they don't go out of business. They have no insurer to reject them, as their insurer is the taxpayer who they can get as much money from as they like. Even when the government is found to be guilty by itself, the organization doesn't face consequences even when it pays restitution. The second reason, having a private organization in charge of keeping back the toxic spill is preferable to a government one, is the EPA is not subjected to market forces and therefore is not under market pressures to improve the environment. Private organizations in charge of protecting the local waterways and land from the toxic water in the mines can go out of business. The EPA cannot. If a private company fails due to negligence or poor practices, people will stop doing business with them and do business with someone else. People can easily and voluntarily stop funding a company who is known for failing to take the proper precautions. But what happens if I think the EPA is doing a poor job of protecting the environment and think their policies are actually more damaging to the environment than if they didn't exist at all? What happens if I decide to stop giving them my money and do business with someone else who I think will do a better job of protecting the environment? They'll get their goons to come take my money, and if I resist, they'll kill me and take my money anyway. Tough to hold an organization accountable when they force you to pay for their existence. Government organizations are motivated to maintain the existence of the problem they are in place to solve. It actually helps the EPA if there are huge environmental disasters, or if they make a bigger deal out of the environmental disasters which already exist, so they can demonstrate that they need an increase in funding. They don't blame the problem they aren't solving on their own ineptitude, because if they can frame the issue as an absence of money, then their mistakes will actually lead to a budget increase. Many people think the pollution of the river was a deliberate move by the EPA to increase its funding. One man, a professional geologist for 47 years, predicted the environmental crisis a week in advance. He wrote a letter to the editor of the local paper explaining he thought that EPA was planning to use the Colorado area as a justification for a large increase in funding in order to set up a decontamination plant for toxic water. He outlined one scenario where water fills the mine shafts and then leaks rapidly into local waterways. A week before this happened, he predicted it and said it was something the EPA would do deliberately. I'll have the link to the letter he sent posted on the website. Do I think the EPA deliberately caused this environmental crisis? I don't know. Probably not. If it is true, then their actions fit with what we would expect from them because of their potential benefit from such a disaster, but this doesn't mean they did it. I tend to avoid conspiracy theories as much as possible. They are one of those things where some of them are probably true, and most of them are probably false. And I have no desire to sift through them to decide which is which. And one doesn't need to have a complex conspiracy theory to make the argument the government is evil. They do a pretty good job putting their evil on display anyway. So, to summarize, government fails to protect the environment many times, and even when it successfully protects the environment, it uses violent means to do so. But how might the environment be protected in a free society? What mechanisms might we use to help ensure the world is kept in a livable condition for the long term? I will leave you with that cliffhanger of a question until next week. It should keep you on the edge of your seat, at your computer, on the podcast website hitting refresh until next week's podcast is uploaded and your deepest longings are satiated. Thanks for listening. Feel free to share with your friends or your enemies who this podcast would really bother. My email address is jeremiahjm@gmail.com if you need anything. Enjoy your Labor Day weekend. If you're camping or doing something in the great outdoors, put on your big boy pants and pick up your trash. Even if no one is there to make you do it. You don't need regulation to act like a decent human being. We're all adults. Let's behave like it. Adios.